When he went back up on deck again to look for the boy wasn't there. A moment of panic before he saw him walking along the beach downshore with a pistol hanging in his hand, his head down. Standing there, he felt the hull of the ship lift and slide just slightly, tide coming in, slapping along the rocks of the jetty down there. He turned and went back down into the cabin. He'd brought the two coils of rope from the locker, and he measured the diameter of them with the span of his hand, and that by three, and then counted the number of coils. 50-foot ropes. He hung them over a cleat on the gray, teak deck, and went back down into the cabin. He collected everything and stacked it against the table. There were some plastic jugs of water in the locker off the galley, but all were empty save one. He picked up one of the empties and saw that the plastic had cracked and the water leaked out, and he guessed they'd frozen somewhere on the ship's aimless voyagings, probably several times. He took the half-full jug and set it on the table and unscrewed the cap and sniffed the water and then raised the jug in both hands and drank. Then he drank again. The cans in the galley floor didn't look in any way salvageable, and even in the locker there were some that were badly rusted and some that wore an ominous, bulged look and had burst free of their labels. He sorted through them, shaking them, squeezing them in his hand. He stacked them on the counter atop the small galley refrigerator, names in Spanish, not all of which he knew. He thought there were probably crates of foodstuffs packed somewhere in the hold, but he didn't think any of it would be edible. In any case, there was a limit to what they could take in the cart. It occurred to him that he took this windfall in a fashion dangerously close to matter of fact, but still he said what he had said before, that good luck might be no such thing. There were few nights lying in the dark that he did not envy the dead. He found a can of olive oil and some cans of milk, tea in a rusted metal caddy, a plastic container of some sort of meal that he didn't recognize, a half-empty bag of coffee. He went methodically through the shelves in the locker, sorting what to take from what to leave. When he'd carried everything into the saloon and stacked it against the lower companionway, he went back into the galley and opened the toolbox and set about removing one of the burners from the little gimbaled stove. There was an extra tank of gas in the locker underneath, and he'd already turned it on to see if there was gas in it. He thought it might even be full. He disconnected the braided flex line from the stove and removed the aluminum spiders from the burners and put one of them in the pocket of his coat. He unfastened the brass fittings with a wrench and took the burners loose. Then he uncoupled them and fastened the hose to the coupling pipe and fitted the other end of the hose to the gas bottle and carried it out to the saloon. Lastly, he made a bindle in a plastic tarp of some cans of juice and cans of fruit and of vegetables and tied it with a cord. And then he stripped out of his clothes and piled them among the goods he'd collected and went up onto the deck naked and slid down to the railing with the tarp and swung over the side and dropped into the gray and freezing sea.